Good morning. It is time to get up with the new Fab Four. McShay's McBoard has four QBs right at the top. We'll tell you what makes sense and what does not. And then it's time to learn everything about these future stars. We'll tell you exactly who each of the QBs will remind you of when they get to the league. And the Steelers make the obvious decision, but that doesn't mean it wasn't a huge mistake. All that and more on this Football Friday as we get up with you, starting right now. From the Seaport, Greeny here. Delighted you are there. We consider these like holidays. McShay's got the McDraft. The McBoard is out there. We're ready to break it all down with you and look at the crew that is ready to do it. Dan Graziano is here to dispel all of our fun with facts. We got Lewis Riddick is ready. Mike T is making deals. And Matt Miller, our draft insider, is ready to go as we take a look at Todd McShay's Mock Draft 3.0, released last night. And here we go. No surprise at the very top, of course. It is Jacksonville taking Trevor Lawrence at number one. There's no reason to think that is going to change at any point in the process. At two, another quarterback. He has the Jets taking Zach Wilson, who completed 74% of his passes at BYU last season. That was second best in the country. At three, another quarterback, and this time in a trade. Carolina moving up to take Ohio State's Justin Fields. That is a change from the last mock when he had Carolina taking Trey Lance. McShay now has the North Dakota State quarterback going to the Falcons at four. Should all of this happen, it would be the first time in the history of the draft that quarterbacks went one, two, three, and four. And the fifth name at the quarterback position, as you see on the screen there, would be Mac Jones, who Todd has going to San Francisco. If that were to happen, it would be the fastest five quarterbacks that come off the board in the history of the common draft. So, we will have Todd a little bit later, but let's start digesting some of what we have seen. And Lewis, let's just go to your biggest takeaway. As you look at the quarterbacks at the top of this list, what is your number one takeaway?
I think the pick for Atlanta taking Trey Lance, I think, is an absolute slam dunk if that actually happens. And when I say slam dunk, I think I mean for Trey Lance. That kind of offense that Arthur Smith is going to install there in Atlanta is perfect for Trey. Run heavy, play action pass, deep shots down the field, plenty of movement, plenty of design rollouts. I mean, that's right in Trey Lance's wheelhouse. That's just what he did at North Dakota State. And he may not have to play right away, so he can sit and learn and really just kind of get his feet under him after having sat out all but one game in 2020. I think that would be absolutely perfect. The only two I have questions about is this. This is just in terms of fit. Look, I love Justin Fields. I just think Justin Fields would be perfect in the same type of scenario as Trey Lance. So I think to San Francisco, that would make more sense. Mac Jones to Carolina makes sense to me. Again, a team that's going to do some gun, work from under center, really be a drop-back passing type of team that really emphasizes the run game, play action. I think that would just be a perfect fit for Mac. He looked fantastic running that offense down to Senior Bowl. But all in all, hey, I love the movement. I love the drama at the top of this mock. I can't wait till we get to Cleveland, Greeny. I'm telling you, this is going to be fun.
Mike T, what is your number one takeaway looking at the quarterbacks at the top?
I think Todd nailed it. I think it's Zach Wilson over Sam Darnold. Zach Wilson, as you allude to, very accurate passer, dynamic playmaker. And the other benefit you're getting if you're the New York Jets, Greeny, is you're resetting the clock on a rookie contract, which are absolute steals. And when you compare that to what the Jets would have to guarantee for Sam Darnold, upwards of $25 million in the following year, this is an easy decision. I love Zach Wilson's ability to make plays, and this should set their franchise up for hopefully success. And he's a guy that could compete with Josh Allen down the road.
Yeah, it's worth repeating. That really is where the draft begins. We've known forever and will continue to that Trevor Lawrence is going number one. The Jets really have the first decision to make, and that will inform what a lot of other teams do. Matt Miller, our brand new draft insider, what's your number one takeaway from this mock?
Yeah, Greeny, I think it's the teams are being aggressive to go up and get these quarterbacks. Like you said, four in the top four has never happened before. Five in the top 10 has never happened before. And we see Carolina and San Francisco trading up to get their guys. I can remember not that long ago when teams were holding on to Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, waiting for the tide to turn on these quarterbacks. Now we're seeing in Todd's mock, teams said, no, Teddy Bridgewater, we know the limitations. Jimmy Garoppolo, we know the limitations. Let's find that replacement. Let's identify the guy, go up and get him. It speaks to the philosophy in the NFL right now, but it also speaks to the talent of the five quarterbacks in this draft that teams would be willing to move up as high to get them, or the fact that at 1-2, teams are just willing to say, forget Sam Darnold, we're drafting Zach Wilson. So that movement at the quarterback position, I think, is really signifies where the league is going right now.
Yeah, that aggressiveness. You're talking to a lot of the same people, obviously, that Todd and Mel are talking to. Is that what you're hearing as well, that we should expect teams to be this level of aggressive, that we should expect the quarterbacks to go off the board this level of early?
Yeah, I think so. The key is Miami at number three, what they do at that spot, whether they try to trade it for a Deshaun Watson, whether they sell the pick to a team like Carolina wanting to come up. But I think the Panthers are a smart team to target as a move up. We heard they wanted to get involved in Matthew Stafford. They were very aggressive there. The next best quarterback option this offseason might be Deshaun Watson, but it also could be, if Houston doesn't trade him, it could be trading up to that number three spot to get a Justin Fields or a Mac Jones, as the guys pointed out.
Yeah, and an important point to make there. Some of this will be determined by some of the moves that are yet to take place in free agency involving Deshaun Watson and maybe Dak Prescott and maybe Russell Wilson. We will see. Meanwhile, Lewis, let me come back to you, because I can hear all of the non-quarterbacks that I work with every single day screaming at us right now. Guys, it's not just the quarterbacks. So as we look at the rest of this mock draft, Lewis Riddick, aside from the QBs, what's the number one thing that stands out to you?
Yeah, I think it's the Philly selection there at six. I can just tell you this. If Philly comes up and Ja'Marr Chase is on the board and they don't pick Ja'Marr Chase and they go with Kyle Pitts, and I like Kyle Pitts, I love Ja'Marr Chase, there will be riots in the streets of Philadelphia. They will burn down the city of brotherly love and they will march on the NovaCare complex, I promise you. I think recency bias is something that we all need to be very careful about, and that in this sense. Look, we haven't seen Ja'Marr since 2019 when he absolutely ripped the SEC, and he ripped every single top corner in that division without any problem at all. This guy is a monster, and if he's sitting there at six and he's just waiting for you to pick him, or, and you have your choice between him and Devontae Smith, I think you better take one of them. Look, I'm telling you, look, I like Kyle Pitts. He's not Darren Waller. He's not George Kittle. He's a good weapon, but he's not of that category. And I think it would just be a huge mistake if Philadelphia passed on him if he was sitting there waiting for him.
A reminder, Ja'Marr Chase was the best receiver at LSU 2 years ago, sat out last year because of COVID. Justin Jefferson came into the league this past year and put up all-world kind of numbers. Chase was the better player the year before at LSU. Mike T., same question to you. Aside from the quarterbacks, what's your number one takeaway?
Ja'Marr Chase, he's the best wide receiver in this draft. And what's interesting, Greeny, when you talk to people around the league, how are the opt-outs going to impact decisions ultimately? Ja'Marr Chase, if he had played, may have been the best football player. He'd be in that discussion with Trevor Lawrence. As you just mentioned, he outplayed Justin Jefferson, who was dynamic for Minnesota. So ultimately, is it Devontae Smith or Ja'Marr Chase? And in the balance is going to be one guy played in Excel and Devontae Smith, another one opted out. And there's teams around the league that are really struggling on how to handle the opt-outs. And to me, that's going to be a fascinating dynamic as we get closer to the draft.
Quickly, I mean, you were a GM for two different teams. Mike, would it matter to you? Would the opt-out factor into your thinking?
I would drill down hard. I'd figure out, I want to know why you did it, who helped impact that decision, and go through their whole body of work. But if everything else checked out, I would not hold it against them. This was obviously an insidious virus. And again, Ja'Marr Chase very well may be the best player in this draft that's not a quarterback, and he may be too good of an opportunity to pass up.
And Matt, back to you. Same question. Aside from the quarterbacks, what's your number one takeaway?
Yeah, guys, the running backs, two of them coming off the board in the first round, Najee Harris from Alabama, Travis Etienne from Clemson. I thought we were devaluing running backs in the NFL. Last year, Clyde Edwards-Helaire goes at 32 out of LSU to Kansas City. And then this year, we see two dynamic players. I thought Etienne had a little bit of a down year in 2020. Najee Harris, he probably had the Heisman vote when we got down to the end of the regular season. Obviously, Devontae pulled away toward the end of the year. But seeing two running backs go in the first round, I don't think it's crazy, but it would be a little bit of a surprise just given how the NFL values that position and how deep the running back group is this year. There's a couple other guys out of North Carolina who are making some waves as well.
Yeah, lots to talk about there, and we will as we work our way towards it, about 8 weeks away from the draft. Outstanding there. Much more on this, and again, Todd will join us a little later. Meanwhile, let's get to the big NFL story from the day yesterday, and that was this. Ben Roethlisberger officially back with the Steelers for the coming season, a source telling our Adam Schefter that Roethlisberger willingly reduced his pay to $14 million this coming year from $19 million. in what is the last year of his contract to help lower the team's salary cap hit. Ben released a statement saying, quote, "It is my greatest honor to be a Pittsburgh Steeler and give my all for this organization. I'm grateful to be at this stage of my career and more than happy to adjust my contract in a way that best helps the team to address other players who are so vital to our success. I love this game and love to compete, and I believe in this team and my ability to deliver when called upon." And so Dan Graziano, my insider extraordinaire, gets up with us here this morning, as mentioned. What should we take away from this latest on Ben's contract?
Well, I'd like to see a few more details, because it reminds me of a situation in Peyton Manning's final year in Denver where he took a pay cut of $4 million, but it all just got converted to incentives, and he made it all back when they won the Super Bowl. So I'm interested to see the document, but I'll worry about that on my time. What this means is Ben Roethlisberger's back for one more year, which is what he and the Steelers wanted. The problem is they're going to save $15 million in cap room, which is nice. They would have saved $19 million if they had cut him or if he had retired. I'm just not sure the $15 million does what they need it to do. This is a team with significant question marks at significant positions. Their center, Maurkice Pouncey, has retired. You see this list of free agents. They're a team that was projected over the cap before this all started, and they're still up against it. I don't know if they're going to bring back any of these four guys, and that doesn't even start to address the fact that they have young players like Minkah Fitzpatrick and T.J. Watt who are going to be in line for extensions. Ben Roethlisberger's back, which means they have a quarterback and a legendary one that they all love for one more year. I just think it's possible this is going to be the worst Steelers team he's ever been on, and at the best case scenario is they're going to have a lot of pressure on him, on Mike Tomlin, and a lot of young players and rookies to perform at a high level if they're going to contend.
All right, so that's an interesting look at the big picture there. Mike T, let's drill down. What do you think of this decision by the Steelers and Ben?
This is a bad decision this year and even worse next year. You are stopping progress, and we should celebrate Ben Roethlisberger, Hall of Famer, Mike Tomlin, Hall of Famer. Give them all the credit. But last year, he was 30th in the league in yards per pass attempt, and that matches the film. He can't get the ball down the field. You are stopping progress, Greeny. And when you look at Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, and Baker Mayfield, they're getting better. They're ascending. And by the time we get to next year, when Pittsburgh has a new quarterback, that gap will now be massive. They can't win a championship this year with him, and they're stopping progress in 2022 by having him back this season.
All right, so it is a really complicated circumstance. Lewis, what do you think they need to do there? The Steelers are not a team that rebuilds. They're a team that goes for it every single year. So they bring back Ben. What can they do, given all the restraints financially that Dan is talking about, what can they do to try and compete next year?
Look, I think first and foremost, if you listen to Mike Tomlin talk and listen to Kevin Colbert talk, the number one thing they need to do is fix this offensive line, because that's where they believe that everything started to crumble from the inside out on this football team late in the year last year, and they couldn't maintain any semblance of balance and take some pressure off of Ben Roethlisberger, given the fact that, look, we all know that his skills are not quite the same as what they are. That is where a huge part of their focus will be this year, and they feel as though if they can get that squared away to where they're at least respectable running the football, that they have enough weapons on the perimeter, even if Juju Smith-Schuster isn't back, to go ahead and be dynamic enough where they can put up points on the board. Look, Mike has always felt, that being Mike Tomlin, that the defense is going to be fine. They're going to take care of that side of the ball. TJ's still going to be there. Cam Hayward is still a tremendous, tremendous interior defensive player. They're going to get Devin Bush back. Minkah's still in the fold. So they still feel as though they can play quality winning championship-style football on that side of the ball. But taking care of this offensive line is priority one. And really, what else is their option at quarterback this year? They don't have any other options that they feel comfortable with yet. So I think right now they're just trying to buy some time until they can address it then in a year from now while still competing in 2021.
Yeah, look, they had a lot of problems this year. As I watched them down the stretch of the season, it seemed to me quarterback was comparatively low on the list of things that were holding them back. We will see where they wind up going. Meanwhile, lots of other news as we work towards the end of the league year. Graziano, let's run the hurry up. Let's start with Dak. What's the latest?
Dak Prescott and the Cowboys continue to work on trying to get a long-term extension. They have had recent talks. I believe they have talked this week. There is a deadline coming up on Tuesday. That's the last day on which teams can apply the franchise tag. Dallas will do that if they don't have a long-term deal in place by then. And I am told that it will, for the second year in a row, be the exclusive franchise tag, which means no other team will be able to offer Dak Prescott a contract. Cowboys are serious about wanting to keep him. The Seahawks are serious about wanting to keep Russell Wilson. There's a lot of smoke around this situation, obviously, with Wilson saying he doesn't want a trade, but then in the next breath giving a list of four teams that he would consider a trade to. Still looks unlikely that Seattle would deal him at this point. There's still a relationship between Wilson and the team, and so they're in contact with each other and working on ways to make things better. This stands in stark juxtaposition to the Houston Texans and Deshaun Watson, who do not have a strong relationship right now. Watson has said he wants out of Houston. The Houston Texans are telling interested teams they're not interested in trading him, and I am told by sources close to this situation that the Texans are just as dug in as Watson, to the point where they're actually saying they're willing to let him sit out the season if that's really what he wants to do. They would recoup some money in terms of his salary, possibly some signing bonus money. So this looks like a serious standoff that could last a little while.
Yeah, you're not the only one who thinks that. On the Huddle and Flow podcast, Jalen Ramsey, who's someone who knows a little bit about this, was on that podcast, and he was talking about just how serious Deshaun is in wanting to be traded. This is what Ramsey said.
But I highly doubt he'll ever, you know, suit up in a Texans uniform again. He's very serious. I would say he's very serious. This is a legacy. Yeah, I mean, he should be serious.
So to be clear, Dan Graziano, just he knows of which he speaks, right? Why is Jalen Ramsey such an interesting person to be commenting on this situation?
Well, they have the same agent, and so, you know, that they're in contact with each other through that connection. And, you know, Jalen Ramsey did this. He was in Jacksonville, didn't like it there, didn't like the way the organization was treating him, and he let it be known he wanted out, and eventually they felt like they were forced to trade him to the Los Angeles Rams. They got two first-round picks, and it was a good deal for them, but he did force his way out. So he knows whereof he speaks, and he's kind of the one who sort of wrote a bit of a playbook for Deshaun Watson if he does want to continue to force this situation and force his way out of Houston.
Now, Mike Tannenbaum, you made a very interesting point in our meeting this morning about the individual who is making those decisions right now in Houston, the history that he and you share, and why you could see him taking this thing all the way. I'd love you to share that.
Greeny, Nick Caserio for 18 years sat right next to Coach Belichick, and I'm using this description in a very positive way as a leader. Coach Belichick would make decisions in a sober, dispassionate, emotionless way. Whatever is best for the football team is what we're going to do, and we are going to ignore the noise. If there's one person in the NFL who I think has the makeup to ride this out the entire year, it's Nick Caserio. After 18 years of watching arguably the all-time best do it, I think Nick will be unaffected by all the noise. I think he's the captain of this ship, and this could go the entire year. Dan alluded to the juxtaposition of the two sides right now, and I wouldn't be surprised if this is ultimately Carson Palmer part two, where Deshaun Watson doesn't play this year and he's not traded.
It would look, at the end of the day, it's in no one's best interest for great football players not to play football. So that's why I sort of shake my head. I would hate to see that. But you see the two sides dug in. Lewis Riddick, what do you think?
I think that's just ridiculous. I mean, what point is Houston proven by doing that? You're just going to make him sit. You're not going to recoup anything for him in return. Your football team right now is devoid of talent. You don't have the assets to improve the football team. So you're just basically saying, we're just going to junk this year. We're going to junk this year, and we'll see what happens next year, simply because we don't want to establish the precedent of star players who are disappointed in how we do things saying that they want to try and then force their way out of town. Look, this is a situation where I think if people are really soberingly honest with themselves, that they created. Houston created this issue here. There had to have been a massive breakdown in communication, given what we know about Deshaun Watson. He wouldn't just up out of nowhere pull this out of his rear end and go, hey, you know what? I just don't want to play for you now because I just figured out there's something better that I want to do. And this isn't just a single situation. This is a systemic issue that's been happening with their star players for a long time. So instead of people here being worrying about precedent and worrying about sending Deshaun a message and let's just stand our ground and make him hold out and recoup his money and let's just see if he's going to take this all the way like Carson and threaten to leave, how about you start thinking about maybe rebuilding your football team and rebuilding the trust of not only the players in the locker room, but other players who are looking at your organization going, I don't want any parts of going anywhere like that. I don't want any parts where every historically great player in this organization rips you once they leave there. They absolutely, that cannot be just a coincidence that that is happening. It can't be. So I think you know what? They better be pretty honest with themselves about why they find themselves in this situation, because if they don't, then it's just going to repeat itself over and over and over again. And aren't you in this business to win?
It's extremely well said. I think it's what a lot of people think. It's worth reminding you, in case you don't know, Nick Caserio was not there for any of this. He's a brand new general manager who kind of walked into the middle of the situation. The systemic problems that seem to be there go all the way to the top of the organization, and that has not changed. Okay, we are just getting rolling here on Get Up This Morning. Busy we will be. Unlike the Texans, the Seahawks are answering calls about Russell Wilson. What is stopping them from trading him? Are they about to make a huge mistake? And back to McShay's McBoard, it's not exactly a McDunk. Wait until you hear how risky it is to draft a quarterback in the first round.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
We want the best of both worlds. We want a hybrid. A smarter hybrid cloud approach with IBM helps retailers manage supply chains with Watson AI while predicting demands with ease. The world is going hybrid with IBM. Visit ibm.com/hybridcloud.
All right, we're back on Get Up. Lewis Riddick, what do we think of this? J.J. Watt getting creative with his post-workout recovery, sitting in a frozen lake. How do we feel about that?
Look, man, you know what I was thinking? I'm sitting there. First of all, I'm thinking, like, what's he sitting on? And, like, all right, so if you cut through the ice and you're in the water, is he treading water? I mean, is there something underneath them that's holding him up? Why isn't he using his arm? J.J. trying to be a member of SEAL Team 6? I mean, what else is he going after now? I mean, but I thought, hey, you know what? I'm not going to knock it, but I ain't going to try it. I know that.
You got a friend in me on that one for sure. All right, J.J. Watt is nuts. Coming up, we roll the dice. Diving into Todd McShay's brand new mock draft next. We are back on Get Up, and as you well know, the quarterback position is the most important in all of team sports. And every year at the draft, a whole bunch of different teams look to solve their problems there. But hitting on a quarterback early in the draft, while on one hand it can lead to great long-term success, history shows that drafting a quarterback is the ultimate in risky business. For every Patrick Mahomes, for every Deshaun Watson, there is a Josh Rosen and a Johnny Manziel. When they tell you drafting a quarterback in the first round is a 50-50 proposition, they are actually being generous. Fewer than half the quarterbacks drafted in round one wind up making a single Pro Bowl, not one. And here are some more incredible numbers. Only 40% of first-round quarterbacks wind up signing a second contract with the team that took them.
With the second pick, the Philadelphia Eagles select Carson Wentz.
When Carson Wentz said, bye, Eagles, bye, it ushered in this. Of the 22 quarterbacks drafted in round one between 2009 and 2016, not a single one of them remains on the team that drafted them. That's right, none.
With the 10th pick, the Kansas City Chiefs select Patrick Mahomes, the second.
There have been 37 quarterbacks drafted in the first round since 2009. That's 12 drafts. Mahomes is the only one among them to win a Super Bowl as a starter. Jared Goff and Cam Newton are the only others to even reach one. The highest graded quarterbacks of the last 10 years are Andrew Luck, Jameis Winston, RG3, and Blaine Gabbert. Luck has since retired. None of the other three were starters this season. So, if you think there is anything about this that is an exact science, think again. Being drafted in the first round doesn't guarantee you a thing. And so, once again, if you're just joining us, Todd McShay releasing his mock draft 3.0, and he has quarterbacks going 1, 2, 3, and 4, and a total of 5 of them, as you see on the screen there, with Mac Jones going in the top 9. Neither of those two things have ever happened before. And so let's talk about risk. And again, Matt Miller, our brand new draft insider, is with us here. Of those projected quarterbacks, which one do you feel comes with the highest risk?
Yeah, Greeny, I love Trey Lance, but I think you have to talk about risk here because of 17 starts at North Dakota State, so not even at the FCS level. So that brings some risk to me. Now, the athletic traits are amazing, but lack of experience, 16 of those starts in 1 year, which he was electric, but one start this year against Central Arkansas where he did not look his best. So I think that is a concern. The athleticism, will it translate right away? I do think Trey would benefit by going somewhere where he can sit behind a Matt Ryan, a Teddy Bridgewater, a Jimmy Garoppolo, where he doesn't have to play right away. You see what he does with the ball in his hands, but there is going to be an acclimation period. I know Bruce Arians says you got to risk it for the biscuit. You might be doing that with Trey Lance this early in a mock draft.
It is worth making sure everyone is aware when we say he only played one game this past year. His team only played one game this past year. They basically opted out of the season but scheduled one game primarily as a showcase for him. So the most unusual circumstance that we have ever seen. Mike Tannenbaum, which of these guys comes with the biggest risk to you?
Totally agree with what Matt just said, which is Trey Lance only playing one game this year. And that's where I think, as Todd and Lewis both alluded to, that if he goes to a place like Atlanta, he could sit for a year and develop. In scouting circles, there's a bedrock principle about how every 10 games you're going to improve. Steve Young talks about it. Bill Parcells talks about it. I mean, it'd be like somebody crazy enough to trade up for Mark Sanchez, who only started 13 games his junior year. By the way, let the record show, he only had 10 interceptions. Who knew that he would enjoy turning the ball over as much as he did once he got to the next level? All seriousness, that was our concern.
See, Sanchez is watching, and you deserve it. That's what just happened. Sanchez is watching, and that's why he froze your signal, because you speak ill of him so unfairly. And to be clear, in case anyone isn't aware, the one who traded up to take Sanchez in the draft was that man, Mike Tannenbaum. Lewis, as we look at these guys in this draft, which one to you comes with the most risk?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Justin Fields, especially if a team moves up to draft him in the top five. And the reason why I say this is this. Look, I think Justin, without knowing him personally yet, and can't wait to watch him throw and go to his pro day and talk to his coaches. Without knowing him, I just wonder why he struggles so much with defenses who are very good at taking away read number one, read number two, a la the Northwestern game, you know, late in the football season. That was something that really stood out to me. He looked like he didn't have enough answers, whether it be he himself, whether the offense didn't have enough of them built in, but it just looked like he froze and panicked and started making bad decisions when it wasn't so clear and easy and defined for him. And I just want to dig into that a little bit more and find out, what is that about? Is that about him? Is that about the offense? Is that about them not allowing him to do certain things in the offense? What was that? Because quite honestly, when I watched Trey Lance play, although it's against a lower level of competition and he didn't play in 2020, I didn't see that. I saw him having answers. I see Mac Jones have answers. I see Zach Wilson have answers when the obvious one isn't there. So that's what would concern me until I find out more about Justin.
We will talk much more about all these guys, obviously, as we work our way there. But I know if you're watching these and you haven't seen much of these players, you're wondering, well, what do they look like? What are they going to be on the next level? So let's do that. Matt, give me a comparison. Who is Justin Fields on the pro level?
Yeah, guys, I look at Justin Fields, 6'2", 6'3", 225 pounds. I see a more athletic Dak Prescott. To Lewis's point, yes, we have to see him work a little bit better off that first read, but he is a great dual threat quarterback. Go back to his true freshman year at Georgia, the way they used him as a runner. Ohio State did a great job rolling him out, and he can hit every level of the field as a thrower.
Mike T, give me the comparison for Zach Wilson. Who is he on the next level?
You know, I'm going to go there, Greeny. He's a poor man's Patrick Mahomes. I saw him in person a couple months ago. I thought he was a little bit more like Jimmy Garoppolo. The more you watch him on tape, he is a dynamic playmaker. And when he gets outside the pocket, his accuracy outside the numbers, 20 yards or more down the field, is remarkable. There's really no comparison besides Patrick Mahomes.
And then, Lewis, to you, how about Mac Jones? Give me the NFL comp on Mac Jones.
Yeah, I'm going to take Jimmy Garoppolo and say that this is what Mac Jones is, just from a style perspective, meaning this. He's going to do his best work in the pocket. Can he get outside the pocket and be serviceable if he needs to, as far as extending plays or running the occasional boot or some kind of dash, some kind of design dash action to get him outside the pocket? Yeah, but he's going to do his best work in the pocket, where he's going to use all the tools mentally to get the ball where it needs to be put, throw it with tremendous touch and accuracy. Look, I think the guy's just a surgeon as far as a pocket passer is concerned.
But so let's talk about the issue of the mobility, because as we put together amongst the quarterbacks who've been drafted over the last 5 or 6 years, These are the ones with the highest total QBR. And one of the things that they all have in common is their ability to make plays with their legs, which is such an incredibly important piece of the evaluation today. Matt Miller, again, you make your living in this, in this draft stuff. Like, where is that now? 15 years ago, Mac Jones would have been a top two pick and no one would have been talking about it. How important is that in the evaluation process for NFL teams right now?
You know, I think it's a bigger point than the supporting cast he had at Alabama, which gets brought up a lot. The four first-round wide receivers that he'll eventually have, Najee Harris in the backfield. I think it is the mobility. And as our guy Hembo texted me this morning, 75% more yards when he's in the pocket than when he's outside the pocket. Some of that comes back to what Lewis said earlier about Justin Fields. Can he do it, or was it something that he wasn't asked to do at Alabama, where they had that great offensive line? He was able to stay in the pocket, survey the field. Also, a lot of play action in their game, so he was able to work off of that. So I think it is a big thing. There will be teams that look at Mac Jones and say, no, that's not the style of football we want to play anymore. We want people who can move, who can create on their own, like a Patrick Mahomes, like a Deshaun Watson. And when you look at the other four quarterbacks that we mentioned as first-round picks, Trevor Lawrence, a great athlete out of Clemson. Trey Lance, we saw the clips earlier, a great athlete out of North Dakota State. We know what Justin Fields can do at Ohio State. We know what Zach Wilson can do at BYU. Mac Jones does not give you that same element of play, even though he is poised within the pocket.
Mike T, we've talked about this before. You love him.
I do. And Lewis and I were in Mobile a couple weeks ago. I think he's a functional athlete, much the way Matt Ryan is. And what I like about him, when he's off schedule, his eyes are down the field, and he can make plays that people don't really think he can outside the numbers. And he was much more productive this year, Greeny, with less to work with than Tua was a year ago with a lot more weapons. So he's not a great athlete, I agree with Matt, but he's twitchier than you think. And because he has good arm strength and he has functional athleticism, he will be able to play well in the pros. And I think ultimately his ceiling is a little bit higher than of Matt Ryan's.
And it's, you know, Lewis, I can't help but wonder that there's got to be people watching this conversation saying that everyone does realize that Tom Brady just won the Super Bowl, right? And Mac Jones could run circles around Tom Brady right now, and Brady has won 7 Super Bowls. So as we make these evaluations, Lewis, I mean, how important should that be?
Look, I think it's something that you want ideally. And I think it's also this mobility issue is a function of what quarterbacks are looking like in high school and in college, and really what you have to choose from at this point. That's just the function of what, you know, how people are evolving and how the quarterback position is evolving at lower levels. Not necessarily, I don't believe, because guys who are less mobile and who are more inclined to be pocket passers can't win in the NFL, because in the NFL, it's still greeny. It's still about having answers with your mind, being able to figure stuff out pre-snap, and as soon as you were early into your dropback, being able to decipher what has happened, what is different than what I saw pre-snap, and where does this ball need to get to, and can I get it there and put it in situations where the weapons who I hope I have around me can do stuff with it. This young man can do that. When you talk to his coaches down in Alabama, they will tell you he has answers, and the more answers you give him, the better it is, because he has no limits from a mental standpoint as far as all the different things you can give him to help him in the course of a football game. And I think that speaks volumes for his projection going into the NFL, because the NFL is about – and the NFL, as much as it is an athletic game, it's a thinking man's game at the quarterback position, because at some point in time, the athletic ability can cancel out, and we saw that in the Super Bowl. Sometimes the other team has good athletes too. You better be able to think your way through it and be able to figure stuff out. And look, Patrick Mahomes is doing that right now, right? He's taking his game to another level mentally as well, which is so scary. But Mac Jones will be just fine. Put him in the right system.
Matt, quick final thought. Go.
Yeah, I'm with Lewis. Get him in the right system. Carolina, San Francisco, somewhere where they will let him play within the pocket, where they have weapons, the ball can come out quickly, and you can let those playmakers go make their plays where he doesn't have to create everything on his own.
And I will say this, just maybe it's part of it is the Saban-Belichick connection. I have felt that guy has New England written all over him for a very long time. We will see as we continue. Is the situation in Seattle worse than we thought? What does Lewis think about Russell Wilson's list? We'll talk about that and more. It's Get Up on ESPN. Fight night tomorrow. Don't miss it. UFC 259. The card is stacked. 3 titles on the line. including the main event between light heavyweight champion Jan Blachowicz and middleweight champion Israel Adesanya. The prelims start at 8 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Plus, and ESPN Deportes. And the main card begins 10 Eastern on pay-per-view. To order in English or Spanish, go to ESPNplus.com/PPV. All right, back to the NFL we go. And as the quarterback carousel continues to spin, will Russell Wilson be the next one on the move? I will remind you, his agent went on the record with Shefty and listed four teams he'd be interested in playing for were he to be traded. The question is there any real chance the Seahawks are going to trade him? They said yesterday they're accepting phone calls, which is one thing to pay close attention to. Dan Graziano, what are we hearing?
Yeah, look, it's not nothing. Obviously, there's something going on here in terms of dissatisfaction with Russell Wilson. If there's a list of potential teams, that means he's at least imagining himself elsewhere besides Seattle. But at this point, it doesn't seem realistic for the Seahawks to trade him. I know talking to people there, they have not proceeded down a path this offseason of, oh, what happens if we trade him? Who do we get at quarterback? That's not on their minds. The finances of it don't work at all. It'd be a $39 million dead salary cap hit if they did trade him. And look, I mean, it's a player that he wants to win. He's made it clear he wants things to be better around him in Seattle. So it's still salvageable. It's not a Deshaun Watson situation. I had a GM once tell me, I always answer my phone in case someone has a better idea than I do. So the fact that Seattle's picking up the phone doesn't necessarily mean they're desperate to unload their quarterback. I think it's more likely than not, far more likely than not, that he plays for the Seahawks this year.
I understand that, but it's one thing to be answering your phone. It's another thing to be willing to publicly say so. So, look, something is going on. I think that's what we take away from this, right, Lewis? Something is going on here. So when the agent goes on the record with Shefty and says, here are four teams Russell would be interested in a trade to, what does that say to you, Lewis Riddick?
It says to me, look, that Russell right now obviously is not happy with the way he sees things going and how he views himself and how he, you know, currently in his situation and how he potentially views himself at those other football teams. And he thinks that it would be, you know, a better situation for him. And if you listen to the reports, and look, we haven't heard anything specifically from Russell on the record right now recently about this situation. It sounds like he views himself one way, and he feels as though his upside is going to be capped if he stays in the current situation and it doesn't improve in a way in which he likes. Namely, that the offense is really put in his hands, and he's allowed to be the one that really decides how it goes. And it sounds like Seattle's not willing to do that, especially considering how late in the year last year, when the offense was in his hands, he wasn't able to really, quote unquote, carry the football team the way he had been doing early on in the football season. So I think they have two different views about it. You know, in many conversations that I had with Pete Carroll in different forms, whether it be, you know, production calls or on NFL Live when we were at the Combine, this is a guy who really does believe in a run-first mantra, heavy play-action-pass type mantra. He believes in balance. He doesn't believe, I don't believe, fundamentally, in just putting it all on the quarterback. And I think Russ is at a point where he feels as though, I deserve to have it on me. I deserve to get that kind of, you know, that kind of respect, and I don't believe I'm going to get it here, and I think these other places would give that to me. So I think that's something that he's putting out there. He's using roundabout ways of doing it and having other people speak for him. But I think that's legit, and we'll see what happens ultimately, whether or not he changes teams.
Let's go back to the other part of this, Mike T. Again, having been a general manager yourself in two different places, the whole we're answering phone calls when they ring part of this I do find fascinating, because I can tell, I mean, Kansas City isn't answering the phone if people are calling about Patrick Mahomes, right? So there's some distinction to be had here. What do you see going on right now? What do you imagine is going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, context is everything, which is John Schneider and Pete Carroll have to answer the phone because Russell Wilson's 32 years old. At the same time, what you need to be doing, Greeny, is you have to sit down with Russell Wilson and his agent and say, what is wrong and how can we fix it? We need to stand shoulder to shoulder and move forward. And I think fundamentally, this is a resource allocation discussion. Remarkably, right now, Seattle has three veteran players on offense. That's really remarkable. And they just gave up two first-round picks for Jamal Adams, another defensive player. Russell Wilson is seeing all these points score. Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, he wants to do the same thing. So what's really important is you do have to look out for the long-term interest of your franchise if there's a deal that you just can't turn down. But more importantly, you have to work at solving problems. get out of your comfort zone and say, hey, we got to fix this together. What do we need to do to move forward?
The question is, do they have the beginning of an impasse that they cannot solve? That, to your point, Graziano, and I'll give you the final word here, it isn't the Deshaun Watson situation yet, but does it feel like it could turn into that eventually? And if so, are they better off getting ahead of it rather than letting it hit them?
Well, again, better off is a relative term. If they were to make the move this offseason, it would set them back significantly in terms of their salary cap and their finances. So you'd effectively be white flagging a season. And I know from having talked to Pete Carroll in the past, that is not something he believes in doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth pointing out that we did not think Jared Goff's contract was tradable. We didn't think they could move on from him, and they did. Teams can figure out ways to do things if they want to. Let's keep a close eye on it. I know it's different. We'll come back to it. I didn't mean to make it the same. I'm just saying.
It's bigger.
Unlikely things seem to happen in the NFL lately all the time. Let me leave that there for the moment because I got to show you a couple of the huge games last night. Selection Sunday is around the corner. We had Jared Butler at number three, Baylor taking on Oklahoma State, and it was the Jared Butler show. Look at him here, under 3 minutes left in the first half with the jam, and that's Baylor up by 11. And it's Oklahoma State with the ball, and now we're going the other way, and it's Butler in the corner for three. Baylor is up by 9. Butler would score 22, 8 of 14 from the floor with under 3 minutes to go. They're up by 4, and he's putting it away. Baylor wins it 81-70, a big win for them as we work our way towards the tournament. Meanwhile, number two in the country, Michigan, was on the floor against their rival Michigan State. Michigan coming off a bad loss the other night. Middle of the first half, Michigan is up by 5, and look at Hunter Dickinson, the big man, that little silky left hand, an 11-point lead in the first half, and they would never look back. It's a 15-point game, and then this happens. It's Dickinson on the dunk. Michigan is pulling away. Into the second half we go. It's a 15-point game. That's Franz Wagner with the three. Michigan clinches the Big Ten regular season championship with a 19-point win over their rivals. And after clinching that, Michigan is closing in on a one seed. Our BPI gives the Wolverines a 62% chance to earn a top seed. That would make Juwan Howard the fourth coach to get a one seed in his very first NCAA tournament. And, stunningly, the first one not named Bill. How about that? As tomorrow, our full day of college basketball across all the networks is highlighted by these two key matchups on ESPN. Number 4, Illinois, taking on number 7, Ohio State. And then, of course, Duke and Carolina. It's always outstanding. That one's a sonic blockbuster. All the action tomorrow on ESPN. Coming up, we're diving into McShay's new McBoard, including the biggest question: should the Jets trade Sam Darnold and draft his replacement? McShay will join us, and Mark Sanchez will join us. He knows a little bit about being a young star quarterback in New York out of USC. Sanchez Live as we continue on ESPN.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.
This afternoon, we wrap up our spring training schedule on ESPN and the app with the World Series champion Dodgers taking on the Royals at 3 Eastern. Clayton Kershaw on the mound. Dave Fleming and Jess Mendoza will have the call. From the Seaport, Greeny here. Delighted you are there. Dan Orlovsky looks like his own evil twin. Cam Jordan, live and in the flesh.
You guys do what you guys do best, and I'm going to sit here with my bag of popcorn.
What up, dude?
America loves drunk Tom Brady.
Tequila doesn't allow you to realize anything.
I was on that yak.
I think this is hollow, so it would float.
Let the record show that Ninko today has now displayed a picture of himself sacking Russell Wilson in the Super Bowl behind him, and now his replica Lombardi trophy.
Hey, that's not a replica. That's from Tiffany's.
You and Ryan Clark with those Super Bowl trophies.
That is not even a humble brag.
That's a brag.
I welcome the one, the only, Jalen Rose.
You know that he's in his duffy.
I don't know what that means.
He's in his bag.
How is his hairline getting younger?
So crispy.
It has gotten ludicrous, but delightfully so.
This is how I like my get up. It's just like I like my coffee, with just a touch of cream.
I mean, come on.
Back to you, Michael.
I'm pleased to be back.
What the French toast, bro?
This is going to require another meeting. Good fun here every single day, and we are so glad that you choose to get up with us. And with that, we welcome you to another hour here, coming to you live, as always, from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. We're talking about the mock draft, and we have the man behind it. Todd McShay is ready to roll with us today. He's live. Mark Sanchez joins our party. The crew is ready to go, and we are talking about the McBoard. Here we go. Mock 3.0 from Todd McShay. And if he's right, it will be unprecedented. He's got four quarterbacks going at the very top. No surprise, Trevor Lawrence, number one to Jacksonville. It's been that way since the moment the season ended, and that won't change. At two, Todd has the New York Jets taking Zach Wilson from BYU. He completed 74% of his passes last year. That was second best in the country. At three, McShay has a trade. He has the Panthers coming up to take Ohio State's Justin Fields. That would put Fields ahead of Trey Lance, which is the opposite of the order that McShay had them going last time. Here's Lance now going number four in the newest mock draft to Atlanta. If this were to happen again, it would be the first time in the common draft era that we had quarterbacks with each of the first four picks. And then he's got a fifth one going at number nine overall. You see it there, Mac Jones projecting to San Francisco. So it is an offense-heavy top of the draft. And again, we will see a lot of quarterbacks going on night one. And so here he is, McShay himself. And so, Todd, let's start at number two, where all of this really does begin. We've known forever what's happening at number one. The Jets have some interesting decisions to make, and Sam Darnold, their current quarterback, is part of those. Why do you see them making the move away from him and taking Zach Wilson?
Listen, I don't know what they're going to do. And they're still deciding what they're going to do, and it's all about value. You got to realize, if you bring in Zach Wilson, you're paying him a fraction of what you're going to have to pay Sam Darnold down the road in that second contract. So that's what they have to figure out. And they also need to figure out what's the trade value. What can they get to move Darnold, or what can they get to move out of number two if they stick with Sam? So it's going to be interesting to see. To me, it's one of the most fascinating picks we've seen in a long time, because you've got an organization that has four first-round picks in a two-year span. I think eight picks in the first three rounds in a two-year span can even gain more draft capital by moving their quarterback or moving back if a team wants to move up. And you've got Atlanta at four and Carolina at eight and several other teams that might want to move into that number two spot. So it's a big decision that the Jets have to make that really could define the next 7-10 years of the organization.
For sure. And it is one. We'll see if they wind up taking that right up to the night of the draft or not. In the meantime, let's then go to number three. Justin Fields, it's such a fascinating season that he had, because Ohio State's year, for those who didn't follow this closely, and the Big Ten, at first they weren't playing at all. Then they didn't start playing till the middle of October. That team had all kinds of COVID issues. So it was an up and down year for Justin Fields. How do you see him right now at this stage of the evaluation?
I think he's supremely talented. I think he has really good football intelligence. I think he likes to see his receivers get open before he throws. And you see that with so many different quarterbacks. But to me, he belongs in the top 5-7 in terms of this year's draft. And the Carolina Panthers, I had them moving up to that number three spot because I think they are desperate to get a quarterback that can – they can win those games. I told you, the eight games that they lost by one score a year ago, they need a quarterback in the fourth quarter that can win a few of those and get them in a situation where they can make it into the playoffs. So I think Fields is so talented, and I think this is a unique year. You have Trevor Lawrence, who's a generational talent. You've got Zach Wilson, who reminds me a lot of you know, Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, and then you've got Fields, who's got a chance to maybe be the best of them when it's all said and done if he's developed properly.
All right, let me bring Mark and Lewis into the conversation here. And Mark Sanchez, I'll get to you in a second, because the Darnold piece of this, I'm fascinated by you. But Lewis, you brought up something earlier about Justin Fields. And because we're talking about him, I'd like to get to that. Your concern, and we'll get McShay in the conversation here. You said you had exactly those questions about his ability to come off of the first or second read. Let's get into that here with what you've seen from Justin Fields so far.
Look, I mean, I look at the games where he struggled, and why did you struggle? And it's really this. Look, Northwestern made a concerted effort to make sure they tried to take away the number one read and force him to go elsewhere, force him to scan the field quickly and find other options. And sometimes He wasn't quite able to do that. And when he wasn't able to do that, then everything kind of went helter-skelter in the pocket. And I can just tell you this from a defensive perspective. When I'm seeing that on tape, I'm saying this, look, I want to make sure I'm trying to make this guy think on his feet when it's not meaning and make it not so clean for him. I want him to get to number two, to number three, to execute the whole field. Because as he's trying to do that, what else is happening is my pass rush is working up front, and they're going to make that pocket more and more dirty as the down progresses. And that's what I saw him struggle with. Now, what I want to know is that him, is that a function of the offense? Is that a function of them not allowing him to do more within that offense? I want to know why he didn't seem to have more answers in certain situations. I'm not trying to knock the kid as far as what his mental ability is, because I don't know what it is. That's part of this process. That's what I would want to ask him, what I want to ask his coaches, and have a good feel for going into this draft.
McShay, those are the big questions. What do we know of the answers?
Well, first of all, Ryan Day is one of the best, I would say, quarterback coaches as a head coach in all of college football. And so he makes it a very quarterback-friendly system. I completely agree with what Lewis is saying, but you got to figure it out. I think he has great football intelligence. I do. I think he hasn't been asked maybe to get from that first read to the second read like some of the other pro-style systems that we see. Zach Wilson's in a more pro-style system. Trey Lance at North Dakota State, the FCS, is in a more pro-style system. But that's going to be the biggest progression that he has to make in Justin Fields. And I think he's going to be able to make it, but that's the gamble and the risk that you're taking if you're drafting him somewhere in the top five.
And Mark Sanchez, then let me circle back to you and with you to the second pick in this draft and the big decision that Todd was talking about that the Jets have to make here with regard to what to do about Sam Darnold and whether or not to draft the quarterback there at number two. I know he's someone you know well. He's a USC guy. You're a USC guy. How do you see that situation?
Most importantly, I think for Sam, he's got to get to a quarterback-friendly system, a quarterback-friendly coach immediately. He doesn't want to get caught waiting around, going back and forth with the Jets. Yes, we like you. No, we don't. While they're trying to find his replacement, I think there are options for him, and then they have to decide what is the best option, right? Do I go somewhere and compete week one as a starter? Maybe the Eagles, the Panthers, the 49ers? Or do I go somewhere and am I going to be a placeholder for their eventual, rookie draft pick, somebody who takes, Fields or Wilson or somebody else like that? Is that where he's going to go? But I think time is of the essence for him. He's got to make a move as soon as he can for the best possibility for his future.
But to be clear, when you say make a move, he really doesn't have the ability to make a move. So you what you're saying is you would like to see a move made regarding him, yes? And you would like to see him out of New York.
Yes. I think that's the best. If they're already entertaining all these other options like they are, if they could have gotten rid of him now already, I think they would have. So they're working with what they have right now, and that just shows you what his trade value is. I think it should be better than that, but unfortunately it's not right now, so they just got to do something fast to get him out of there.
Now, Lewis, let me circle back to you on that thought then. If you were the one making that decision, and of course they're evaluating this as closely as a person can, but would you be inclined right now to be thinking we need to restart the clock financially and reset the quarterback position at number two?
No, quite honestly, I wouldn't. I would be thinking about, one, what is it that went wrong with Sam Darnold? Because it wasn't that long ago. Remember, we were having these kind of discussions about the fact that this is the kind of guy who can create second reaction throws. This is the kind of guy who doesn't need a perfect platform. This is the kind of guy who can throw the ball from different arm angles. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, he's junk. Let's move on. Let's get the next hottest thing coming up right now.
I didn't say he's junk.
As if to, and then we just totally, no, I'm not saying you, Mark, I'm not saying you at all. I'm saying overall, okay? What I'm saying is overall, it's like, well, okay, we need to move on from him and maybe consider drafting a guy like Zach Wilson, number two overall, because he has, it's this recency bias thing again. And this is the thing I think people forget, or not forget, but they're not paying enough attention to. Look, we did their game on Monday night against the New England Patriots this past year. And in the games preceding that, watching their tape, this offensive line was a huge problem as far as pass protection. Their run game was a huge problem as far as creating yards per rush for their running backs. And Sam was in a situation where he just absolutely could not win. He could not win. And I agree with Mark in this regard. When you start hearing this talk already about, we like him, maybe we don't. If we could get some good value for him, we'd move on. Maybe we should keep him. We don't quite know what we're going to do. If I'm Sam, I'm like, get me the hell out of here then. Just get me out of here because I know you don't really believe in me and you're not keeping this in proper context in terms of the situation you put me in the first place. So I think they've already pushed this so far down the road, they have to move on.
He's 100% right. Mark, hold that thought. Here's what I have to let McShay go. McShay will join us later in the hour. Ali, our producer, we're coming back to this next. I'm taking a short break. We're coming back for more of this conversation in just a moment. I'm producing it from here. And we'll also talk about that guy, Deshaun Watson. Does he want out? We know he does. Is he going to get out? And how should that play out? And then Mark Sanchez is a huge fan of Dak Prescott. How is that situation going to play out? The quarterback conversation's coming fast and furious as we get up with you on ESPN.
We want the best of both worlds. We want a hybrid. A smarter hybrid cloud approach with IBM helps retailers manage supply chains with Watson AI while predicting demands with ease. The world is going hybrid with IBM. Visit ibm.com/hybridcloud.
All right, we got good college basketball coming your way tomorrow across all the networks, highlighted by two huge matchups on ESPN. Number 4, Illinois, taking on number 7, Ohio State. Both of those teams could wind up one seeds. And then you got Duke and Carolina squaring off. That's always epic. And this one's a sonic blockbuster. It's all tomorrow on ESPN. Okay, as promised, we needed to come back to this conversation. If you were with us just moments ago, we were really into a pretty intense discussion of what should happen right at the top of this draft. We all know what's happening at number 1. And then the New York Jets at number 2 have a choice to make. They can try and build around Sam Darnold, for whom they traded up to 3 just 3 seasons ago, and try and put a real team around him and try and win. Or they can use that second pick on one of the highly touted quarterbacks in this draft, most notably in this case, Zach Wilson. And where we left off, Mark Sanchez, you were raising your hand, and I couldn't get you in then, but I can now. Mark, go.
Yeah, this is my favorite part of the year, Greeny. The McRib is back. The McShay mock draft is back. This is the best time of year, okay? Here's the deal. Sam Darnold is more than capable. The issue with Sam Darnold was the supporting cast last year. So I don't care who you bring in at quarterback for the New York Jets, they need help. That position, more than anything, more than any sport, more than any player on the team, needs help. That's just the bottom line. I think we all can agree with that. The problem is, and you know this market, Greeny, I know this market because I've lived it. I've lived the highs and the lows. He has too short of a leash right now. They need him to make plays that he's incapable of making because he doesn't have the supporting cast. And as soon as he goes 3 and out 2 times this year, he's getting booed. His ass is getting booed out of the stadium. Okay, so that's not fair to the kid to do that. That's why you could tell I'm jacked up right now, Greeny. I want this kid to do well. Obviously, I'm biased. I love him. But they got to do right by him and whichever quarterback goes in there. So the other issue for him is these quarterbacks at the top of the league, right? The Dak Prescott's, the Russell Wilson's, the Deshaun Watson's. These guys are drawing attention away from Sam in a year that's different than any other. These guys are talking about leaving. They're using their LeBron James, Tom Brady flexibility and saying like, hey, I want out of here. I'm the man in town. I don't like it. I'm out. That draws attention away from Sam because now you get teams that he could go to, the Eagles, the Broncos, all these other teams that he could go in and compete right now, the 49ers. They're all thinking, well, shoot, if we could get Deshaun Watson, if we could get Dak Prescott, if we could get Russell Wilson, Russell Wilson's available. See, this is all tough for Sam. This puts him in a very difficult spot. I'm good.
I agree with literally 100% of the things that you just said. And I think this is not an unfair statement to make, Lewis Riddick, that Sam Darnold has been in a situation the last 3 years. I have no idea how good he might actually be. That practically no quarterback could have succeeded in, right? He has had no chance. So I do not think any evaluation of him at this stage, Lewis, is anything other than premature. They're going to do all the work they can on it with the Jets, but that is the way I think, the only reasonable way to view him right now, Lewis Riddick.
And Greeny, you know what? We all know this. We all know that if we are going to truly take an intelligent look at football, and in particular quarterback play, we know as much as we want to make it just about them and attach quarterback wins to quarterbacks and put all of it on them as far as heaping the praise and putting all of it on them as far as giving them the blame. We know it doesn't really work that way. And we know in the case of Sam Darnold, there's a reason why they lost all the football games that they lost, and it wasn't simply because Sam Darnold isn't good enough. Sam Darnold isn't tough enough. Sam Darnold isn't, you know, able to handle the pressure of the New York market, blah, 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 blah. It was abysmal around him, and they know it. We know it. The people who played with him know it. The people who played against him know it. But the fact of the matter is this. When we get to this time of year, and when we really start looking at how teams assign blame and really take credit as far as for success, we know that a lot of it, the quarter gets dumped on the quarterback, and Sam's getting dumped on here. And I agree. He may need to move on, but that doesn't mean necessarily that's the right thing to do.
And so, Graziano, quickly, from the people you talk to around the league, what is the expectation? Because all of eyes will be on number two. Is the expectation at this stage of their evaluation, what is it?
I think that most people you talk to on the outside are expecting the Jets to move on and take a quarterback at two and try and trade Sam Darnold. I know, you know, listening to Todd McShay, obviously he knows as well, the Jets haven't quite gotten to the point where they've made that decision yet, so the outside speculation is just that. But a lot of it will come down to what they can get in return for Sam Darnold, what they could get in return for the number two pick. How far back would you have to go? Are you only going back to four with the Falcons? Are you going back to eight with the Panthers? You know, that can determine which way you go, because as Todd pointed out, it is all about value, and that's where the Jets are right now, asking themselves those questions.
All right, we're just getting this hour rolling with all kinds of football conversation on the way. It's not exactly a slam dunk. Wait until you hear just how risky it is to draft any quarterback in the first round. That's on the way. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
We're back on Get Up, and that is Sneaky Hembo, and he's coming for Graziano today. Here's the question. Which Hall of Fame quarterback owns the record for most touchdown passes in his final NFL season? That's the question. We'll see if Graziano can get that one right. He is as good at this as anyone is at anything. And as we continue, coming up, who will blink first in Houston? Are the Texans already making an enormous mistake? That's on the way. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. We really look forward to this every single day when Hembo goes up against Graziano. Dan, which Hall of Fame quarterback has the record for most touchdown passes in his final season?
Greeny, it's been a tough morning for me. I'm distracted by questions of my own, like, are Sanchez and Tannenbaum going to fight? Do you even know what a McRib is? Is that electronic football game behind Lewis Riddick in operational order, and can I come over and play with it? So I really don't know. I haven't had time to think about this. Just going to guess. Staubach, I think, was still playing well at the end. Is it Roger Staubach?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. He got
come
it right.
On.
He just threw a name out, and he got it right. I cannot believe this.
I don't know what's going on. This is an all-time streak. I don't know what's going on.
Hembo and I talked about it during the break that there was no way in the world he was going to get it. It's Roger Staubach.
It was Marino last week. It couldn't be him again. I don't know. Staubach's always a good guess.
First. Kurt Warner, by the way, is second. That is unbelievable.
I would have got that.
All right. Graziano, let's run the hurry up here with the latest on a bunch of quarterbacks. Let's begin with Big Ben.
Big Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers agreed to a new contract for 2021. He is taking $5 million less this year than he was scheduled to, from $19 million down to $14 million. We'll save them about $15 million on their salary cap this year. They'll carry a $10 million dead money charge for him next year, but obviously they're not worried about that. They wanted Ben back. He wanted to be back. He's back. Now they have other work to do. The Cowboys and Dak Prescott still have work to do on a contract extension, which both sides still want. There have been conversations between the sides recently. As recently as this week, Tuesday is the deadline for teams to apply the franchise tag. Cowboys will do that again if there's no long-term deal in place. And for the second year in a row, it will be the exclusive version of the franchise tag, which means no other team can make Dak Prescott an offer. Teams are trying to make the Houston Texans offers for Deshaun Watson, but the Texans still aren't listening. Watson has made it clear that he does not want to play for the Houston Texans ever again. The Houston Texans are trying to make it clear that they have no intention of trading him. I've been told by sources this week that the Texans are comfortable with letting Watson sit out the season if that's really what he wants to do. Obviously, a lot of tough talk from both sides. We'll see how this situation plays out in the coming weeks and months.
Yes, absolutely. And I wanted to actually stop down on that here for a moment because, Mark Sanchez, we've not had you on the show for a long time while this whole thing has been brewing. And you mentioned it just a few minutes ago in the context of a different conversation, that a guy like Deshaun Watson is driving so many other teams' quarterback decisions. But right now the Texans are saying they're not willing to trade him. What is your perspective on how this thing is playing out and what should happen from here?
Well, I think this thing's going to be a mess going into September. I would not be shocked if that's the case, if this is a situation like we saw with Carson Palmer and the Cincinnati Bengals, and both teams just saying, hey, whoever wants to flinch first, go for it, both sides, really. But the only thing that's a draw for Deshaun Watson in Texas right now is that there's no state income tax and he's getting paid a lot of money. Other than that, I wouldn't want to go play quarterback there. I don't know if there's anything attractive about that place. You give up DeAndre Hopkins last year in free agency. Nobody knows if Will Fuller's coming back. what other weapons do you have offensively? You just lost J.J. Watt. What's attractive about that place? Even if they get to a place where both sides say, hey, let's talk about it, what can you possibly offer this kid that makes him want to go there? Their roster's looking more and more like the New York Jets.
Yeah, it's a terrible situation, and yet the on-the-field piece of it feels like that's just a small part of the puzzle, right, Lewis? There is more going on here for Deshaun Watson than just this is a bad team right now. But you made an interesting point earlier, Lewis, and I'd like you to get to it, because Graziano just said the Texans are dug in and they're willing to let him sit out the season if that's what's going to happen. And I asked in the meeting, and I'll ask it to you, what exact purpose does that serve?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's the question that I have, because right now you're just cutting off your nose to spite your face, and you want to send him a message, and you want to make sure that, you know, you don't establish this precedent that anytime a player is disgruntled about the way we do business here, that they can just come in into the front office and say, I want to get out of here. Well, this isn't just a one-off type of situation. Every significant individual that has laced them up for that franchise leaves there and doesn't have very flattering things to say about how they handle business. Every significant one. I mean, you've already saw what Andre Johnson has said. We know how DeAndre Hopkins left there. Now we're seeing Deshaun Watson. JJ asked to be released so he can go somewhere, and he said, look, to compete for championships. And we know what the rumblings are underneath as far as how disappointed they are as far as how they conduct business. So you would think that Houston would look internally and look inside themselves and go, what are we doing wrong here to make all these guys talk badly about us? But no, let's just send Deshaun a message, make him sit out all year, not recoup anything for him, maybe go 3-13 this time, or maybe 2-14 instead of 4-12, but we will have sent him a message. That's just ridiculous, and I don't understand what the point is. I guess, you know, maybe some teams just aren't incentivized enough really to win. That's a problem.
Right, and there's another side to that too, Mark, as a player who played recently. That message is also being sent to every other player around the National Football League, right? They're all seeing this thing play out, and I have to believe the Texans, who will probably already have a very difficult time convincing anyone to come play for them, if this Deshaun Watson, the longer this thing stays hanging over them, I have to believe players talk to each other, they're going to have a tough time getting anybody to want to come there, Mark.
Oh, I guarantee the word around the league is, hey, man, don't go near Houston. I mean, avoid that place. At all costs, unless it's your last deal and you're trying to get your last contract and take care of your family and secure something financially, don't go there. That's not the place you want to be.
Yeah, that point was just made the other day by someone. I forget. Oh, it was Cam Jordan who was on here the other day saying for a while, Dan Graziano, that people viewed the Cleveland Browns that way. That's a team you just didn't want any part of. Clearly, to their everlasting credit, they have changed that perspective. Does it feel to you as we work our way towards free agency in just a few days that the Houston Texans are that kind of team right now?
Sure. Obviously, a lot of there's been a lot of bad publicity around that team going back to the DeAndre Hopkins trade and prior to that. Plus, you know, there are a lot of free agents don't want to go somewhere if they don't know who the quarterback's going to be. So that's a factor as well if they don't have the Deshaun Watson situation ironed out by then. Absolutely, it will be a factor in people's decision making.
All right, much more football as we go. Todd McShay is going to rejoin us in just a few minutes and back to the draft. But tomorrow is fight night, and it will be must-see TV. Three championships on the line at UFC 259 in Las Vegas. The card headlined by a super fight between light heavyweight champion Jan Blachowicz and middleweight champ Israel Adesanya, with Blachowicz's title on the line. And a reminder that DraftKings is the official daily fantasy sports partner of UFC, and this Saturday, new players can play free for over $100,000 in prizes when you make your deposit. Download the DraftKings app, sign up with the promo code OCTAGON for your chance at $100,000 in prizes only on DraftKings. And let us now bring in our very own Daniel Cormier, who is ready for the night. Daniel, great to see you. You are one of only four athletes to hold two titles at the same time. From your experience, what will be Adesanya's biggest challenge in trying to do that tomorrow?
Well, you know, for Izzy, it's about him fighting his fight, but also dealing with the extra weight. Greeny, Izzy's going to weigh in at 193 pounds this morning. The weight is 205. Jan Blachowicz is going to go into the octagon over 220. So it's going to be a little bit of a difference for him in MMA. But in his kickboxing career, he fought all the way up at heavyweight. So this is a young man that understands managing the weight differences. But Jan Blachowicz is a big, powerful guy that has every intention on not allowing Izzy to join that club of double champions.
Now, that is just one of several huge fights tomorrow night. Amanda Nunes is a huge favorite in another, in the co-main event. If you were coaching her opponent, Megan Anderson, what would you tell her is the best approach to try and pull off what would be a substantial upset?
I mean, this would be the biggest upset in UFC history. There has never been anything like this. Amanda goes into fights every time minus 1,000, as she is against Megan Anderson this time. Megan Anderson is a big girl. She's a massive girl for the weight class, a true 145-pound fighter. She needs to go forward, try to put Amanda on her back. The only areas that we've seen Amanda Nunes struggle, and that was a long time ago, was when she's taken down and fatigue sets in. But this is the greatest female fighter of all time, and she deserves to be viewed in the light that she is. This is a big ask for Megan Anderson. She has worked her way into a title fight, but the mountain to climb against Amanda Nunes is one that is so formidable that no one has been able to even really challenge her as of late.
All right, so we will see what happens there. And then one more thing I wanted to ask you while I have you. Anyone who knows you are a huge fan of the New Orleans Saints. So what are your thoughts on the possibility of Russell Wilson coming to New Orleans?
Wait, listen, man, when I saw him list the Saints, because we deal with, me as a fan, I dealt with Harden wanting out of Houston, Drew Brees retiring. I was like, we never get any love. But then I saw Wilson put the Saints on the short list, and I just started, got on my knees and said a prayer, like, come on, please, man. If we can roll from Drew Brees into Russell Wilson, we got a chance because the team is made. The team is ready to win right now. You add a piece like that, and we go win the Super Bowl. I'm just excited. I hope it works. The mayor's begging. Everybody in New Orleans, we're sitting on pins and needles hoping that Russ, let me tell you something, man. Down on Bourbon Street. The food's fantastic. We can help you. It's going to be a great fit if you come down to the Bayou. It's a beautiful place to live.
That's an outstanding sales pitch. Daniel, great to see you. Thank you so much. We'll see you tomorrow. Huge night for all of us here at ESPN. We got the fights. UFC 259, the stacked card. Prelims start 8 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Plus, and ESPN Deportes. The main card begins 10 Eastern on pay-per-view. To order in English and Spanish, go to ESPNplus.com/PPV. But wait, there's more. How about the NBA game of the night last night? And it was a good one between the Bucks and the Grizzlies. And it's Giannis on the road. We'll pick it up late in the fourth. Under four to play. Grizzlies up one. Ja Morant working on Giannis and gets it to go. The Grizz up three. 40 seconds to go. The Grizzlies lead is two. It's Giannis. He's kicking it. It's Pat Connaughton. He's knocking it down. Bucks a one-point lead. 12 seconds left. Bucks still up one. Watch Morant. You just can't stop this guy. 35 for him. Grizz up one with 7 seconds left. Stay with the play. Drew Holiday to the baseline. 2 seconds left. Bang! He knocks it down. Holiday had 15. Morant now inbounding, trying to find a way to the win. Desmond Bane throws it up. Three-pointer is no good, and the Bucks hang on. Giannis 26, 11 rebounds and 8 assists. Milwaukee wins at 112-111. As we continue next, back to McShay's McBoard, and it's not exactly a slam dunk. Wait till you hear just how risky it is to draft any quarterback in round one. That's next on Get Up.
Lift every voice and sing.
In 1946, Marion Motley and Bill Willis were two of the first African Americans to play pro football. They went on to win 5 consecutive championships with the Browns. But it was their perseverance that helped convince Brooklyn Dodgers general manager Branch Rickey that Jackie Robinson could break baseball's color barrier the very next year.
We've got baseball coming your way this afternoon, wrapping up our spring training schedule on ESPN. World Series champion Dodgers take on the Royals 3 Eastern. Clayton Kershaw on the mound. Dave Fleming and Jess Mendoza behind the mic. Looking forward to that. And with that, we welcome you back to our studio. I'm Mike Greenberg. This is Get Up on ESPN. We're with you live and commercial free for the next 13 minutes, taking you to the top of the hour. And that is when First Take takes over. Is Ben Roethlisberger the worst quarterback in the AFC North? Should the Seahawks be actively shopping Russell Wilson? Stephen A. Max and Charlie will discuss that and more as they join us at the top of the hour. Again, we are with you commercial free from now until then. And we're talking about quarterbacks because at the end of the day, that is without question the most important position in all of team sports. And every year at the NFL draft, a bunch of teams look to solve their problems at the position. Now, hitting on a quarterback early in the draft can, of course, lead to all kinds of success. But history shows drafting a quarterback is a very, very risky proposition. For every Patrick Mahomes, for every Deshaun Watson, there is a Josh Rosen and a Johnny Manziel. When they tell you drafting a quarterback in the first round is a 50-50 proposition, they are actually being generous. Fewer than half the quarterbacks drafted in round one wind up making a single Pro Bowl, not one. And here are some more incredible numbers. Only 40% of first-round quarterbacks wind up signing a second contract with the team that took them.
With the second pick, the Philadelphia Eagles select Carson Wentz.
When Carson Wentz said, bye, Eagles, bye, it ushered in this. Of the 22 quarterbacks drafted in round one between 2009 and 2016, not a single one of them remains on the team that drafted them. That's right, none.
With the 10th pick, the Kansas City Chiefs select Patrick Mahomes, the second.
There have been 37 quarterbacks drafted in the first round since 2009. That's 12 drafts. Mahomes is the only one among them to win a Super Bowl as a starter. Jared Goff and Cam Newton are the only others to even reach one. The highest graded quarterbacks of the last 10 years are Andrew Luck, Jameis Winston, RG3, and Blaine Gabbert. Luck has since retired. None of the other three were starters this season. So, if you think there is anything about this that is an exact science, think again. Being drafted in the first round doesn't guarantee you a thing. And that said, we know that there will be 5, or at least we overwhelmingly anticipate there will be 5 quarterbacks that go in the first round this year. And as we released Todd McShay's Mock Draft 3.0, he has 4 of them going with the first 4 picks, and then the 5th in Mac Jones going in the top 9. So it is that kind of year. And we have Todd McShay back with us here in this conversation with Lewis and Mark Sanchez. And Todd, how would you describe why? You just heard all of those stats there, and you've heard them a million times. Why is it such a risky proposition taking any quarterback in the first round?
I've never missed Greeny. I have no idea what you're talking about. It's easy, right? Now, I mean, there's so many factors from the scheme they're playing in to where they ultimately wind up in the system that they're in and the supporting cast that they have. And so many of these guys get drafted early and are in situations with teams that don't have good talent around them. So it makes it really difficult. But I still love it. It's my favorite part of this job is evaluating quarterbacks. It's the first thing I do when the season's over is go study the tape on all these guys because I'm dying to try to get more information. And I've learned from all of my big mistakes.
So that said, you've got five of them going in the first nine picks. Who would you define, Todd McShay, as the riskiest? Which, if we talk about risk, which one do you think comes with the most risk this year?
Yeah, I would say risk-reward goes to Trey Lance, the North Dakota State quarterback, who played in a pro-style system. He's big. He's physical. I think he has fast eyes and can process. I think he has all the tools. The problem is I just haven't seen enough of him. I've seen 17 starts, which is scary. You want to see somewhere in that 25 to 35 range. And with just 17, you just don't know what you're getting when you're buying that quarterback. So, to me, he has all of the tools mentally and physically to be great, but you just haven't seen enough of them.
Sanchez, how about you? Which is, if you look at these guys, which one do you think has the most risk?
Yeah, I'd agree with Todd on that one. I think Trey Lance is that guy. He's got a little bit of a longer release, not the end of the world. That's something he could potentially work on. But really what I saw, when I see him, I can't unsee Jalen Hurts. I see a lot of Jalen Hurts in him. I also see this inaccuracy, and I mean just slightly, right, where he slows down the receiver, he slows down their forward progress, and he limits yards after the catch. In coach speak, he's essentially leaving meat on the bone. There's big plays to be had that they don't capitalize on because he misses just slightly. So that's my only knock on him. And then the level of competition, number of games, number of starts, you know, that was a knock on me coming out in the draft, only 16 starts. So those are all factors. That's why I think he's risky.
And I will remind everyone, just in case you don't know, not having played many games is not his fault. That was not because he's choosing that. Sure. His team didn't play the season this year basically because of COVID. They scheduled one game, so that was the only one he had the chance to play. Lewis, how about you? The quarterback in the first round this year that you think has the highest risk?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Justin Fields, and I know this is going to be one that's going to cause a lot of discussion, but my point being this, from a defensive player perspective, I could see what defensive coordinators saw about what is the key to really troubling, to really confusing Justin Fields, and that's this. Look, you have to sell out and make it hard for him to not be able to go where he is looking initially. Read number one, read number two. If you can get him to hold and second guess himself, that's where bad decisions, I thought, really came into play with him. And you saw it time and time again against Northwestern. So for me, if I'm drafting him, I want to know why those things happened. I want to know if it was a function of the offense, if it was a function of them not allowing him to be more creative on the football field in terms of having other options that he could go to, or did he not have the answers? I just want to know that. And if I could get those kind of questions answered, then look, physically, he's as gifted, if not more gifted, than every single other quarterback in this draft. But until I have those answers, I'd be a little bit leery at this point in time. And that's what makes it so cool. That's what makes this whole draft debate and quarterback debate so intriguing.
Teams basically have 8 weeks to make those decisions and those evaluations. Meanwhile, let's take a look again, if I can, at the five quarterbacks that he has going in this group. Again, Mac Jones is the fifth one, and you see the others who round out Todd McShay's top 10 in his current mock draft 3.0. So I like to do things a little differently on this show. I usually ask these guys all the questions, but I want to give some of my teammates here the opportunity to ask McShay some questions about his mock draft. So who's first up? Dan Graziano.
Oh, what boy. Is
your question? Here we go, McShay. Get ready. Fasten your seatbelt. Here's a question from Dan Graziano. Go.
Yeah, Todd, I just wonder, based on how weird everything's been, right? The opt-outs, the weird scheduling, no combine. For you as an evaluator, what's been the most difficult challenge as a result of this unprecedented strange year?
Not being able to talk to scouts who have the medical and the one-on-one personal time that they have typically in a year. The only time that these scouts have had one-on-one, face-to-face time to like really get to know a player was at the Senior Bowl, and that was between plexiglass. So it's been different. I've had so many different scouts and general managers call me with actual questions rather than just wanting to bat it back and forth, like asking me, what have you seen? Because you've been on the field as an analyst for X amount of games with this team. What have you seen from that quarterback, or what have you seen from these players? And it's so different.
There's a little less certainty this year than usual, but as we just showed you, it's a 50-50 proposition any other year anyway. Who is next? Lewis, what is your question for McShay?
I mean, all right, fine. Here it is. Come on, McShay. I want to know why this. How in the world did you put – how did you have Dallas taking Patrick Surtain over Caleb Farley? Just tell me why you did that. Why didn't you like Caleb Farley better than Patrick Surtain?
It's a good question. I think Surtain is a more complete player. He's going to defend the run more. He's long. He's got all the tools. Obviously, he comes from a good background in terms of the NFL experience with his dad, 14 years in the league. Farley, let's put it this way. You're a DB guy. If I had to cover one wide receiver on one route, one time I would go with Farley. I think he's the man-to-man guy, but he is a buffet tackler. He picks and chooses, and he's not as physical. That's why.
That may literally be the first question that we have had about a defensive player in this draft in all the time that we've been talking about it, which should give you some indication of where everybody's priorities are in football.
Of course I was going to go that route,
Sanchez,
Greeny.
What is your question for Todd McShay, Mark Sanchez?
Obviously, I'm going quarterback, but Foxborough, the New England Patriots, that place is like Fort Knox. You don't get a peep out of there, and all of a sudden we get everybody talking about, hey, Belichick's in love with Mac Jones. He's going to do everything he can to get him in this draft. Todd, tell me the truth. What's going on? Is this real, or is this just propaganda?
I've heard the same thing, and I don't trust it at all. Everything that I hear about New England and everything I hear from people in and around the Patriots, you know, the Patriots situation, I never trust. It's always the opposite. I think they're going to wind up going with a veteran. I think that he's going to wind up keeping that pick at 15 and trying to continue to build the defense probably and bring in a special player on that side of the ball. It won't surprise me at all if they just stand pat, let all five of these quarterbacks go ahead of them and say, yeah, we're good. We'll just bring in one of these veterans. Jimmy Garoppolo makes a lot of sense because of everything that happened before and basically the reason that they got the breakup between Belichick and Brady. But who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But I do not think they're going to wind up moving up, and I don't think the Patriots are going to wind up drafting a quarterback.
Okay, fair enough. We will see how all that plays out. Again, the entire mock draft is available on ESPN+. Quickly, I have some news that has just come in from Adam Schefter's Twitter feed, and it's not a surprise, but the Washington football team has released Alex Smith, who was this year's choice for the NFL's Comeback Player of the Year, overwhelmingly so. He has been released. They save almost $15 million in cap space. So in an offseason where Deshaun Watson might be available, Dak Prescott might be available, Russell Wilson might be available, Lewis, how interested do you think teams will be in Alex Smith as he becomes available now?
Look, I think Alex is a tremendous mentor. I think Alex would be a tremendous bridge quarterback at this point in time. Obviously, people are going to really try and connect the dots between him and Chicago, given his familiarity with Matt Nagy and that system that they run in Chicago like it was in Kansas City. I don't think that's the option that they're looking for. But look, I have nothing but infinite respect for Alex Smith, and any team would be better served having him in their quarterback room for sure.
I think everybody feels that way. Graziano, watch it. Again, Sanchez has his hand up again. Go ahead, Mark.
What about Jacksonville? Urban Meyer, he can help Trevor Lawrence, help Trevor Lawrence's transition. He played for Urban Meyer. I don't know. I just thought about that.
He did. It's good. He did. He played for him at Utah and was the number one pick in the draft.
That's a great point, Mark.
How about that? Graziano, what should we expect here real quick?
Yeah, I think he'll be of interest, like Lewis says, a bridge guy. Look, let's say San Francisco does decide to trade Jimmy Garoppolo and draft a quarterback. Then Alex Smith maybe goes back to where it all began. Let's say he's the option in New England if they're developing a young guy. He'll be appealing. His reputation around the league is outstanding, and obviously no one can question what he went through and survived and came back from this year. So he'll have some interest if he wants to play.
just an outstanding day. Again, McShay, fabulous work by you. The mock draft is up. I will talk to you on the radio in an hour. I have a lot of questions. I will be coast to coast on ESPN Radio in 60 seconds, as a matter of fact. And First Take is next, right here, right now.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.